You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Leah Carter.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, March 1st, 2017. IU Law Professor Steve Sanders discusses the Trump administration's recent decisions affecting LGBTQ rights later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The Monroe County School Board gave its final approval last night to a $2.5 million bus contract with Michigan-based Auxilio Services. Superintendent Judy DeMuth indicated the board was obligated to accept the lowest bidder for bus service.
This was a three-year process just to regroup. We've had numerous meetings about this. This was a bid, and as a public entity, there is a specific legal way that we have to accept bids. All of those bids were accepted, and we are this evening awarding our lowest bidders.
According to the Herald-Times, Transportation Director Nathan Oliver said locally contracted bus drivers could only fill 31 of the school corporation's 43 routes. Local bids for those 31 routes came at a higher cost than what Auxilio proposed to cover with all the routes. Several members of the community called for the board to cancel the Auxilio contract. Resident Alice Corey said the company wasn't properly vetted. Corey belongs to a group that independently researched the company and reported its finding to the board.
In this case, Auxilio may have been the lowest, but they are certainly not the best choice for our schools or community. The public record presents safety concerns about Auxilio's bus inspection record and hiring and firing practices. Furthermore, the negative impact Auxilio will have on our local workforce and economy are not an acceptable trade-off for a quick solution to a frustrating problem. As soon as Auxilio is interjected between MCCSC and bus drivers, money that would otherwise stay in our local economy is extracted and sent to the corporation's headquarters to pay administrative costs and salaries. Auxilio will either fail to find drivers because their compensation package is worse than both MCCSC and owner-operators, or they will be under so much pressure to find drivers for all of the routes, they will scramble for employees, use lax hiring standards, and fill the positions with unqualified applicants.
Corey said she doesn't expect Auxilio will offer comparable wages or benefits to the current owner-operators. Bloomington residents William Vandendries and Stephen Dora are also part of the Bloomington Solidarity Network, which produced the report. Vandendries has a child that goes to Templeton Elementary School.
What is the third word in our school system's name? It's community. Monroe County Community School Corporation, not Monroe County Private School Corporation, and definitely not Monroe County Profit School Corporation. Community. Me, you, people in this room, these drivers, these parents, these children, not Auxilio's CEO and administration, and not Auxilio's shareholders. Our community. The community that gave you your jobs. The community that can take them away.
Vandendries said the board was the target of a campaign of misinformation.
We also find in the report that you were misled through a public relations campaign of selective and misleading information, and that some members of our school administration are, in fact, in favor of privatizing educational services, despite their publicly stated positions otherwise.
Stephen Dora told the board that in accepting the contract, they will make enemies within their community. Dora said he anticipates Auxilio's bus contract will open the door for more privatization within the school district.
Auxilio seeks to maximize its profits and will, as they have done in other school districts, seek to privatize maintenance, janitorial, and lunch service staff in order to increase their shareholder dividends. This can only be described as a gross betrayal of the workers of our community, made more disgusting by the fact that many of our drivers here today have been serving their schools, our schools, for decades with nothing but exceptional and safe work for our students.
Board member Sue Wanzer asked Superintendent DeMuth for time to address some of the concerns voiced by audience members. She began by saying the school corporation already contracts with private companies for landscaping, construction, and maintenance.
This is not about money. It was about getting... No, it is. Excuse me, I listened to you. It was about us being able to find enough drivers. Please, did I listen to you? It was about us trying to find drivers. We've been doing this for 3 years. We have every single day, our superintendent has had to find other people to drive our buses. When we can't get our kids to school or... Please, the people who have driven for us are great, but what about all those spaces where we don't have drivers? The money... We've been doing this for 3 years. No, it's our problem, and we're solving the problem. We're hiring a company. The money that is paid to the drivers who will be driving for this company, which includes all of our contract drivers, that money stays in the community. We, for 3 years, have flexed our schedules. We have increased the pay. We have combined a bus driver job with other jobs. It's not about the money. I want our children driven to and from school without having them driven home at 6 o'clock on a Friday.
Along with the Auxilio contract, the board approved a 182-day contract with owner-operator Regina Cobb at a cost of $54,000. Both contracts were approved together. Prior to the vote, Wanzer moved to have each contract voted on separately, but her motion failed. The bus contracts were approved on a vote of 5-0, with one abstaining, board member Kathy Fuentes Roer abstaining. Board member Kelly Smith was absent.
An initiative to add another access point to Ellettsville's Heritage Trail is moving forward. In their meeting this week, the Ellettsville Town Council approved a memorandum of understanding between the town and Ellettsville Main Street Incorporated on acquiring land to serve as a trailhead. Lisa Simcoe, president of Ellettsville Main Street Incorporated, addressed the town council.
What we're asking is that you consider the benefits of adding this property next to the trail. We see it as that it will provide easy accessibility to the downtown Heritage Trail for the elderly and handicapped. It will add beauty of the trail and ensures future upkeep. It will prevent the property from being used for other functions that are not related to parks and recreation. It will continue to increase tourism and economic vitality interest for Ellettsville area businesses. Lastly, it will add to the quality of life for residents, businesses, and visitors to the downtown Ellettsville area.
Cisco says her organization plans to buy the property and then gift it to the town.
Our group was awarded a $20,000 grant as part of the Community Foundation of Bloomington and Monroe County. They have a 2016-17 Community Impact Funding Initiative, and they felt that this project deemed their investment as well.
Cisco said the Memorandum of Understanding is a necessary first step in order for her organization to be able to buy the property with the grant money. The 1.7-acre parcel includes a parking area for 10 vehicles and a garage. Ellettsville Main Street is asking to retain access to the garage for storage and to use as a gathering place for events on the trail. However, the town will be responsible for development and maintenance costs of the property. Town attorney Darla Brown says the agreement doesn't limit the town's ability to work out details about the garage in the future. Though the organization cannot bear the sole cost of maintaining the property, Cisco implied it might be able to provide some financial support in the future. It raised funds for the trail initially. The long-term plan for the trail is to connect it with the 3.5-mile Karst Farm Greenway in northwestern Monroe County.
Bloomington Board of Public Works has approved a request from the developers of Patterson Point to allow a parking boulevard to encroach into the right-of-way. Patterson Point is a mixed-use development planned at the corner of West 3rd Street and Patterson Drive. Public Improvement Manager Rick Alexander described the next phase of the development.
This phase includes four new buildings and a parking boulevard. The one apartment building will face Isaac, while the three multi-use buildings will face West 3rd Street. There was much discussion about how to configure the parking at this site, and ultimately it was decided that the parking boulevard would be constructed with access into it from West 3rd, and the exit would be on Patterson.
Alexander went on to say the outer portion of the boulevard encroaches into the right-of-way by 6 feet on West 3rd and by 9 feet on Patterson. One leg of the parking boulevard will run parallel to 3rd Street, while another leg will run south, parallel to Patterson Drive.
The area where the boulevard will be built is currently undeveloped and is behind the existing public sidewalks and will not reduce the width of the walks or the existing roadways. It will, however, increase the width of the parking boulevard and will provide adequate room for the vehicles to pull in and out of those parking spaces along the commercial storefronts.
The parking boulevard was a controversial component of the site plan when it was reviewed by the Plan Commission. Commission members were ultimately able to resolve their concerns about the impact it would have on pedestrians and traffic at the intersection of 3rd and Patterson.
The City of Bloomington is requesting that all city residents participate in its first ever community-wide scientific survey. 3,000 random households were chosen to complete the survey by mail, but the entire survey is now open to all of the city. The deadline to complete it is March 13th. The online responses will be sorted separately from the random sample to ensure unbiased results. For more information, you can contact Mary Catherine Carmichael by telephone at 812-349-3406. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Leah Carter.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Recently, WFHB's LGBTQ Public Affairs Show, Blooming Out, hosted a conversation with Indiana University law professor Steve Sanders. We bring you a portion of that conversation now. Sanders begins by addressing the Trump administration's reversal of a directive related to transgender access to bathrooms.
The decision from the Trump administration was not unexpected. Basically, what happened was, it wasn't so much rescinding a law, it was rescinding legal guidance. The Obama administration Department of Justice and Department of Education took the position that the federal law that prevents sex discrimination in education, known as Title IX, also covered transgender students, that discrimination on the basis of gender identity is discrimination on the basis of sex and therefore falls under Title IX. And so the guidance we're talking about basically was legal guidance, not binding, but still influential and important to school districts about what their obligations are to treat transgender students fairly and consistently with the Obama administration's interpretation of Title IX. Really, what this comes down to is that particular interpretation of Title IX is disputed. Some people say Congress, when it passed that law decades ago, couldn't have had in mind the idea of including gender identity as part of the protected discrimination. So really, that's the main issue that the Supreme Court will be asked to hash out in this case. Does the federal law already on the books that prevents discrimination on the basis of sex, which has long been understood to assist women in achieving equal opportunity in education, does that extend to gender identity as well? Sure. And so we will see. I thought one of the most interesting parts of that story was what was revealed in some of the reporting that Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, no surprise, he is no friend of the LGBT community and never has been during his years in the Senate. He was very much in favor of this. The Education Secretary, Betsy DeVos, who I think many people sort of viewed skeptically, she has a background of kind of religious conservative activism, that she actually was standing up for continuing this guidance, and she was resistant to the idea of doing what was ultimately done.
I had heard that DeVos, that was her original way that she was leaning. And to me, it's just kind of perplexing to begin with.
I think it's an example of the phenomenon that we saw unfold over 20 years with gay and lesbian rights and ultimately same-sex marriage. That is, Notions of equality and seeing people as human beings and understanding the impact on their dignity, eventually that penetrates even into the minds of many people who are otherwise conservative on issues or have religious perspectives on issues. Maybe we're starting to see that with transgender equality as well, that Betsy DeVos, despite her generally conservative policy background, was actually able to see this issue in human terms and in terms of the potential human costs if transgender students are not treated fairly. But as we said, her position in the end did not carry the day. I don't think Trump really cares about policy one way or the other. I think Trump is somebody, though, who's an excellent politician. And I think he's calculated that the country is already, the same-sex marriage debate is over, and there's nothing to be gained by trying to reopen that or trying to keep fighting that front. I think he recognizes that the situation is different with transgender equality, and this is just something that he can give to his base and to religious and social conservatives. At the end of the day, I don't think he has any strong policy views on this area. I think he views it entirely in terms of, well, you know, I want the gays and lesbians with me, but the transgender people, it's more important that I have the social conservatives.
Sure.
Yeah, and we do know that Mike Pence is significantly stronger in his opinions in that case. Do you see maybe the Trump administration, any future issues facing the LGBT community because of Mike Pence's influence in that?
Well, Congress may consider initiatives that are purported to strengthen religious liberty and to help religious conservatives resist gay and lesbian civil rights. We'll see what kind of weight the administration throws behind that. You know, in many different day-to-day decisions, executive branch agencies do things that end up potentially affecting LGBT rights in ways that are often maybe small. The Obama administration's State Department under Hillary Clinton took a very aggressive position promoting LGBT rights as human rights in international forums like the UN. We'll see the extent to which Mike Pence, you know, tries to keep how committed he is on this issue to trying to roll back progress.
Any final thoughts on the policy, the administration, and moving forward with the LGBTQ community?
I just think the LGBT movement's at a really, really interesting time right now. The marriage debate, there is isolated resistance to it. There's still bad bills and bad laws in some red states that have to be fought back. We have this birth certificate issue now that's going to the Federal Court of Appeals in Chicago. Indiana's refusing to treat essentially the birth documentation that children of same-sex couples get in the same way as the birth documentation that children of opposite-sex couples get. So there are still fires to be put out, but I'm not sure that the LGBT movement nationally has kind of decided what its priorities are. In some sense, it is transgender equality and dignity, I think. In some sense, it's continuing to advance the fight for anti-discrimination laws at the state and federal levels. I think one interesting phenomenon is there's been no talk whatsoever of an LGBT anti-discrimination law in this session of the General Assembly. Evidently, the LGBT lobbying groups have just given up on that as a lost cause, and neither side really wants to compromise and get maybe a partial solution and give a little bit and at least get something and try to come back later and get a stronger law after a few years. That issue just has gone completely silent in Indiana, which I think is unfortunate in some ways.
That was IU Law Professor Steve Sanders speaking with the host of WFHB's Blooming Out. To hear that full interview, go to WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Oh, there's a lot of news this week. Did you expect anything else? Scammers are everywhere. Are you having someone do your taxes? The Indiana Attorney General has just issued a warning about shady tax preparers who promise your refund right away in the form of a loan or a debit card. Some suckers have racked up a bill for services and only then discovered they did not qualify for the loan which was going to pay it off. And some who got debit cards discovered there was a $35 fee every time they tried to use them. Watch out and find out before you sign. Then there are computers. Are you a Microsoft person or a Mac person? Macintosh users have been thumbing their noses at PC types for years, since most viruses and hacks have targeted Microsoft computers. But no more. This year we'll see an explosion of malware aimed at Macs and Apple operating systems. And now there are ransomware viruses that will lock up a Mac, encrypt all the files, and demand payment to get your computer back. But even when the money is paid, the fix is not forthcoming. That's cruel. The bad guys mostly get into Macs by tricking the owner into installing an infected program, thus giving permission which totally bypasses all of Apple's safeguards. Sometimes it's a corrupted version of a legit program. BitTorrent is one that's been spotted. Or a scareware pop-up. Your computer is infected. Click here. And sometimes it's a freebie app promising you to unlock and use a pirated program. Some of those are even found in the regular Mac App Store. So far, there's only one security program that can stop Mac ransomware. It's called ESET, E-S-E-T. Mac users, keep everything updated and be very, very careful with anything you install. Remember Heartbleed, the big hole in online security discovered a couple of years ago? Well, now there's Cloudbleed. If you use the cloud to store your data or operate your mobile device, listen up and prepare to get scared. One of the biggest security companies for cloud computing is Cloudflare. They service 5.5 million websites, and just 2 weeks ago discovered that a flaw in their programming had been leaking sensitive information for months. The flaw is fixed, but your passwords, chats, hotel bookings, private messages on dating services, emails, online viewing, and everything may have been exposed. Vulnerable websites include Bitcoin, Yelp, Uber, Bitdefender, Icon Archive, Men's Health, Runner's World, and millions more. Nobody knows how much private data was leaked, or whose it is. Storing your data in the cloud is like putting all your eggs in one basket and then asking somebody else to hold the basket. It means you have to be on the internet to do anything. And maybe it means you've been running around naked in cyberspace. I'm keeping my data and backing it up myself. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Simon Williams, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by the crew of Blooming Out.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Leah Carter. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2015 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Just send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.